And with that, I'd like to invite Ginny and the afternoon speakers up for the second Q&A. Thank you.
Are you in the Q&A? Are you in the Q&A?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep. No, he's in the Q&A. He may not be done.
Yep.
Okay, so come on up. Get the great. Okay, we had a lot of afternoon speakers. Are you still awake, given all these afternoon speakers?
Supposed to be the bookend here.
Right. Come on, Steve. Age before beauty.
Thank you so much.
Stephen. Okay. Adams. It's a new rock.
Not everybody? Okay. Two? Number two? Where's the mic? Okay, there you go.
Hi, Ginny. Ed McGuire from CLSA. As we were discussing a little earlier, you have, you know, a few of your growth areas, you know, cloud and analytics are also subject to deflationary forces. And you talked a bit about openness and looking for margins. And what I'm hearing is much more of a focus on becoming an application company. And in the past, you know, there was a fairly distinct division between being infrastructure and being applications, where you had a universe of partners. Could you discuss, number one, how you're addressing the moving ahead of the deflationary aspects of a lot of the software, for instance, that's free, like Hadoop, and also how, as you embrace these solutions, you keep your partners, you know, fully engaged and you know, express that to your customers.
Okay, that is a good observation of a question here, because you know, I want to go back to this point A about open, because we are strong supporters of open and have evidence and roadmap every place we've done it, Eclipse, Apache, et cetera. We build value on top. So we do monetize open. You get the open, you get the breadth of deployment, but then you put your value on top. So whether that's to get ahead or not, that's how the model works. This point about applications, you know, when people say, well, gee, are you in the going in the application business? We are not. When the systems of records these guys all talked about, there is no reason that those are legacy applications. You would not go into those as a business today. There are entrenched competitors. There are people that have that. But the future, this front office, to me, there's no longer really a bright line. I think you see that with companies. There's not a bright line between, well, is that an application? Is it data? Is it capability, right, instead of an application? And we very much are moving forward into all the capability that goes around the front office and goes around data. So that's how I think about it. And as you, the legacy, which, you know, people say, would you acquire something? Would you acquire SAP? Would you acquire, not SAP, would you acquire ERP? I mean, in generally speaking, would you want to go look at something that is a system of record? What would you do with it? And I think you got to think of those as, you know, clients don't just rip and replace those things, right? They stay for, that's why they're called systems of record. They stay for a very long time. So the new opportunity, go where you can make a market. So back to always keep thinking principles, go to where you would make a market. And so that's why I don't think of it as a bright line. I think of it as a set of capabilities. And I think you guys all used, Robert, Mike, you might want to, you use the word capabilities as you guys both speak too as well. Or Steve, anybody want to add to
Well, I would add to another point here that was made, and there's nothing new about the way in which technology evolves, and those things that used to have great value diminish in value, new things come in. If you don't keep pace with where the markets are going, where the technology is going, if you're not up-leveling your technologies, you find you're stuck back where, at a point where that technology is no longer of great value to customers. So, you know, the money that we spend in R&D year in and year out is all about moving the portfolio forward. And Ginny had a couple of examples this morning, things that we could charge money for 15 years ago, they're virtually free today. And that's a continuing process that's never going to end, not ever. You know, and we're quite good at living with it because we know how to take advantage of that the billions of dollars of R&D that we spend every year.
Yeah. Number four?
Hi, Cindy Shaw with Discern. One of the things we heard this morning was that IBM eats its own cooking, and a lot of the things that you do for your customers, you do for yourselves. And I'm wondering how much, you know, where's the chicken and the egg? Do you do it first at IBM and use that to get up the learning curve and then take it to your customers and use yourself as a reference account?
Yeah, and both. Both, I would say, because it depends. Some of these, obviously, we're not in mining, as an example, right? You saw that big the demonstration out there. But often, particularly when it comes to reinventing the enterprise itself that would apply to lots of people, I absolutely think of us as the bellwether of what we are doing in advancing the smarter enterprise concept. And that we often do to ourselves or do with ourselves, show examples, because clients want to see examples and they want to see outputs, right, and to role model off of. And this is why Bridget said, we'll talk a minute about this GIE practice. So this would be taking our learnings, you know, not that you know everything. You take your learnings, though, marry it with the client, and then go forward with that. So talk about that. Yes. And then others, to John's point, I'll then have John comment, mm-hmm. we do work with the clients out there, and then you co-create. Yeah. So it's both.
So it's really interesting. What we find with our clients is, on the one hand, they want to say, well, what's best practice in my industry, whether it's, you know, GIE or front office. But on the other, they want to say, well, what are best-in-class organizations regardless? And our continual transformation over the last 10 years or so, the fact that we've continued going up our own value chain from shared services to operations to more front office analytics such as our sales optimization tools, they really want to leverage and learn from that. So as I said in my conversation with you, all those clients that came this past year to learn about our GIE, they would typically either bring their top management team or their top finance team or their top HR team. And what they would do is discuss what we've done and then say, well, how can I leverage that to my own organization? And, of course, that's an opportunity for us both to share what we have, but also then to, you know, emerge it into an engagement with them. And that's the path that we take.
Because we do have a unique model. You know, I think you've heard of that a couple different times. To really be globally integrated at the scale we're at, that is why people often do come. And so, and that's why we're able to do a lot of things Mark kept saying that others can't do. It's why our growth markets continue to operate like they do. No one has that. So there is a part that we share, but I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead, and then John, chime in on the at the client.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, when I talked about social business and the social networking platform that the industry is rated very well, it came from a set of technologies out of our internal IT organization. It came from a set of technologies out of IBM Research, and it came from a set of technologies in our development labs. We brought those capabilities together to build a platform that we launched to the market based on our experience with those technologies at a very large scale across a large number of users, and that is a way that we took that particular technology to market. So it's really both on how we look at these things.
And then through some of these, you know, client examples, you'll take the example again of drug discovery. So fundamentally what we do is we do teardowns of the molecules, the diseases, and we look for correlations among the data to do new drug discovery. So tear it down, build it back up. Well, what if you can do that internal to IBM and you can sort of tear down relationships of employees, clients, et cetera, and then build back up and do discovery on best combinations of people and clients, skills and clients, skills and certain types of services engagement. So the whole area of discovery is something that we sort of learned on the outside. Now we bring it back, apply it to our business, say, where can we use discovery algorithms within inside IBM?
And then we can take that and apply it to talent management programs to take back to
exactly.
the again.
Exactly. Right, so. And then it circles back into Mike's products.
Okay, three.
Bill Shope, Goldman Sachs. When we look at some of the big data and analytics solutions you've shown us today, behind the solutions there's obviously a complex array of next-generation hardware and software technology, some of which you own, some of which you develop, but many cases, as I understand it, you're partnering. Could you walk through the partnership process and furthermore how you decide whether or not you're going to partner or develop within or acquire?
Okay. Well, I'll let Steve, on behalf of all of... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many different scenarios here depending upon the
maybe an example or two might help because I recognize it might be multiple.
You know, and I think, you know, some of the best examples are when you look at a particular industry, an industry vertical, you know, where let's say we, with a power grid, right, so an electric company. Clearly, we have some unique analytic technology, but we don't do anything on the grid. You know, we're going to have to partner with an ABB. We're going to have to partner with a GE Transmission. We're going to have to partner with a variety of small companies that do sensors and instrumentation. You know, there are domain experts in that area that we're going to have to partner with. We're going to bring deep analytics skill. We're going to bring the ability to handle massive amounts of real-time data. But we need that relationship with other industry vertical participants to create a complete solution for that customer. And that's pretty typical of many of the environments that we go into where, you know, we're bringing a certain class of technology, but that domain expertise and some unique elements are going to be provided by others. And that's why it's critical as we look at smarter city, smarter planet initiatives. You know, it is very much an ecosystem build out as opposed to something that IBM does entirely on its own.
And then I guess just an extension of that, when it's a technology partnership, the decision versus partnership or acquiring, given that it does seem a lot of these solutions have a greater variety of next generation technologies coming in than we've seen in the past.
Sure. I mean, you know, as you get into more advanced scenarios, you're going to have some of the latest technologies. I mean, in dealing with terabytes and petabytes of data in real time and doing, you know, filtering and on-the-fly analytics, you're pushing the leading edge of what's understood in computer science as well as the underlying nature of the hardware.
But, you know, Bill, I would go back to those still kind of those fundamental points about acquisition for us. And when we say, can it be, you know, the reach of 170 countries, can it go through that reach? Is it scalable IP? Does it extend something? You know, when something may be great, but it's in a very much of a niche, that isn't going to, we'll partner with that, right? That doesn't make sense. And so I think if you keep going back to those three questions, there is a pretty, I would say, pretty natural evolution to our decision. And to Cindy's point about ecosystems, we think about those ecosystems as important and the commitments we've made to them, and that's all part of a decision. Do you acquire or do you not?
Right.
You guys always look at both synergies with us and then what impact does it have on an ecosystem based on what we do. But those three questions always kind of get fundamental on that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Number one?
Hi, Vlad Ram, Credit Suisse. This is for Steve or Robert. So there seems to be an increasing level of disruption in infrastructure software, and I think a lot of people alluded to it. So there's virtualization, there's OpenStack, there's the Pivotal Initiative. And I know you guys are evolving the products there, and you're bundling and solution selling, so that helps. But are there any concerns that the core software business could be facing increasing headwinds? Thank you.
Well, not increasing headwinds, just continuing headwinds. that's the world we live in. And you know, I think Ginny made an important point here about, you know, these open initiatives. I mean, we went to Rackspace together with NASA, you know, developed the original code base around OpenStack. We went to them and worked with them specifically on an open initiative that would involve other companies. Red Hat came in and others. We made that announcement a number of months ago because we saw that as a way in which the entire industry would lift itself relative to the interoperability challenges of heterogeneous systems in these cloud deployment scenarios. From there, you got to run like hell to innovate around those open standards if you want to make a business for yourself, because all the boats suddenly have lifted. Everyone's on an even playing field. You know, proprietary standards make it possible for somebody to try to hang on to a niche, right, and control a position, at least for a period of time. Everybody will attack that position, eventually erode all your profit, and you're dead. The alternative is to say, let's adopt the standards, let's build on top of that, and let's move quickly to deliver innovative solutions leveraging those standards. And that model's, I think, become very clear over the last couple of decades as a superior model for innovation and optimization. So we're doing that around OpenStack. We're doing that around software-defined networks. We just had an announcement this week with a whole set of networking companies around software-defined networking. You know, what's happening around OpenFlow and those technologies. So my view is that you embrace those things and then you innovate rapidly. That's the strategy. And that always has you on your toes. You are always in some way both under threat and chasing an opportunity.
That is why, I'm sorry, Robert, let me just, guys, I think it's really a fundamental point about our company, this continuous transformation, and you don't fight these trends, you embrace them, and you go faster. And that is what IBM is, and it's why we've been here, it's why we will be here, and it's that, to me, I think, whether there have been many of these trends like this, not just open, and open's one of them, or whether it was skills coming up in other parts of the world, you don't fight them, you embrace them, and then you go on top of them. Or people have said, why would you be in this country or that country, and aren't you afraid? No, you go faster. And so that element of innovate and speed around the areas you've chosen, right, is just so fundamental to what you watch us do. So go ahead, Robert.
If you start to see what's happening is everything is now getting exposed as a set of services, and we're decomposing these monolithic applications to a set of services. That's what's getting enabled. When we look at WebSphere and a WebSphere application, you know, the next generation of technology that I deliver with WebSphere will enable clients to decompose their applications they currently have and expose the services, or expose the data services, the application services. We've seen this movie before. When the web took off, kind of web 1.0 with web services, I remember having a discussion with a Kix client. They go, oh, Kix is, you know, it's mainframe, it's monolithic. And we were able to adapt Kix. We put web services interfaces to Kix, and we now started to expose all these Kix transactions to the web. What happened to my traditional Kix business? It took off, and I got into double-digit growth in Kix as it took off. So what, like Steve said, you adapt the technology so that it can play in the next, you know, generation of capability that clients are trying to build to. So we see this as an opportunity.
I mean, Steve, Robert, you guys, a lot of software as a service, right? We are going into the,
we're moving as many things as frankly makes sense in the market into a software as a service mode. We now have dozens of offerings. Mike has built out a huge software as a service business. And our view is that it actually is market expanding. You'll get customers that wouldn't otherwise start with you. Most of our customers love the idea of a hybrid on-premise and as a service. They grow in different ways. There's a lot of diversity even in large businesses relative to some things they want this way, some things they want that. So this is positive and expanding. I think there's all this discussion in our industry about somehow or other the next new thing replaces the old. That's not exactly how it happens. If you don't move, you might get replaced. But if you keep moving, you find that the next new thing expands the market, opens up new opportunities, and there are new ways to make money that are now exposed to you.
Well, we had an example in that demo on the cloud. There was open source. There was proprietary source. What really made the difference? The fact that you could actually use it. Because if you looked at the underlying complexity, the single technology is not going to deliver the value. So there's always an opportunity there to innovate and to go where the value actually is realized, which is in the usage.
All right, two. We're going to do one more here.
Thanks. Amit Daryanani, RBC Capital Markets. I just want to extend a little bit more on, could you talk about the software-defined data center or software-defined environment, as you call that? How big of an opportunity do you guys think that's for IBM, and how do you see that ramping, be that in networking or storage, over the next few years? How would IBM participate in that, I guess? And then secondly, just on the systems and technology side, the roadmap showed going from $1.2 billion to $2 billion of pre-tax profits. That's about a 20% CAGR from here. Maybe just give us comfort on how do you sustain 20% EPS or pre-tax profit growth on the hardware side. Thanks.
Well, let's start with, between Steve and Rod, both. Mm-hmm. Rod, let's start with you, though. I mean, because software-defined environment, as I said, it's one of the three principles these guys are all developing to. It is a huge opportunity to us. Think about our capabilities, but let me let Rod answer that.
So when you look at many of the capabilities we have today, I would characterize it as extending from where we are with cloud-based computing. And we'll take it to the next generation. So when you start to look at elements of the infrastructure, today most of the software-defined capabilities around what I would say compute, they're pretty mature. The next stage you'll see is software-defined around the networking elements, followed by storage, and then overall pulling those together end-to-end to a complete software-defined environment. And that will mature in stages. As Steve described, we'll be delivering some capabilities. This year, we've already have some capabilities with other partners that we have started to announce around software-defined networking, and we'll start to see in the next phase more and more capabilities being developed around storage, and then we will start to pull it all together end-to-end.